Chapter 3. Compromise. I see the stack of papers on Headmistress Darcy's desk, and my stomach cramps like it does in the days before my flow comes. I was right about the test.
"What are we going to do?"
I whisper. "I can't keep my own garden alive, much less recite the 7 cures." I wish I was exaggerating. Herb lore has always bored me. And why not? I can't apply the 7 cures to my own experience. Whatever Mother's magic did to me in her belly, I'm not like my peers in more ways than just biology. I'm stronger and quicker to heal than anyone my age has a right to be. I've never been sick, and I've no interest in fertility tea. Mother cites the curious mind as the highest virtue, preferring textbooks to novels. But I'll take Jack Scaletongue adventures over old herb-gathering journals and history books every time. The other girls are already chattering in their seats, but they fall silent when Selin and I arrive. They saved a space, filled seats circling our favourite chairs, like a nest around 2 eggs. The 3 boys in the class sit together in the back of the room, vastly outnumbered. Before Mother opened the doors of Gatherers University to all genders, male herb gatherers were rare, and often derided as inferior to their female counterparts. Most gatherers would refuse male apprentices, and even patients were wary, relegating most male practitioners to research positions. Even now, they are uncommon, and none hold positions of power at the university and hospit. "Hello, boys," Selin says as we pass. I'm the conventionally pretty one, with perfect hair and powdered face, but she's the one their eyes follow. It's no different when we get to our seats. The other girls keep a respectful distance from my personal space, but with Selin, they lean in. I can't blame them. Selin is nearly as royal as I am, sister to the Duchess and daughter of a baron, but her self-confidence and unflappable good spirits infect everyone around her. Other girls want to be near her. They want to be her. Sometimes, I want to be her too. I wonder what it feels like, to be so sure of who you are that others are drawn into your orbit. "Summer solstice is next week," Minda says. She's the oldest of us at 16, with a round face and a warm smile. Her hair is tied back with a simple blue ribbon. "Are you going on the borough tour?" "Mum didn't want me to, but Da gave me permission anyway." Selin holds up her little finger, got the general wrapped up tight. Everyone laughs, but then the eyes turn to me, and my stomach clenches tighter than it did at the sight of the exam papers. "I haven't spoken to the Duchess about it yet." I'm afraid to ask, if I'm honest about it. 13 summers is old enough to go on the annual borough tour, but Mother has refused to let me go for the last 2 years. Even with Selin going, I don't have much hope for change. Invoking my mother has the desired effect, and the eyes fall away. The ones who aren't terrified of Duchess paper worship her. Many do both in equal measure. "I kissed Perrin the stable boy," Selin volunteers, pulling all the attention back to herself. She gives me a secret smile, and I nod my thanks for the save. "Aprons on?" Before Selin can recount her odoriferous exploits, Headmistress Darcy walks in carrying a huge tray of plants in thick clay pots. Her grey short hair is pinned in a tight bun, and she carries the heavy tray effortlessly in hands thick from decades spent setting bones. Darcy was Mother's apprentice once upon a time, another of the surrogates she surrounded me with to make up for her lack of time. I love her like an aunt, even as I disappoint her as a student. We pull our aprons, heavy pocketed things filled with dry herbs and tools, over plain blue apprentice dresses, leaving our seats to meet the headmistress at the planting table. "We need to repot this stiff root," Darcy says. "Does anyone know why?" The other girls pause. Even I know the answer, so the rest of them must. But everyone gives me time to raise my hand first. Grandmum says it's because they know I will be Duchess one day and want to gain favour. I want to believe it is because they are my friends. But the truth is, I don't really have any friends other than Selin. Not ones who truly know me. Olive, Headmistress Darcy points as I lift my hand. Because stiff root tendrils spread quickly, I say, and will crack even the thickest clay in time.
Correct,
Headmistress Darcy beams at me. The force of stiff root tendrils is slow, but enormous. Enough to break even these reinforced pots. She gives one of the pots a solid rap with her heavy teacher's rod. You'll need to twist each stem a few times to break the tendrils free of the clay before you can work it from the soil. Minda is the first to take a plant. She's a big girl and strong, and she grasps the base of the stem properly. But her face reddens as she strains to pull the roots free. I look around, seeing the other girls and boys struggling similarly. Even Selin gives a grunt, failing on the first pull. I take my own plant, gripping the pot firmly with one hand as I grasp the stalk with the other. I twist and yank hard. The stiff root flies free in a spray of dirt, even as the reinforced clay shatters beneath my clutching fingers. My classmates gape at me, and I resist the urge to flee. I've always been stronger than the others, but sometimes I forget how much. Soil covers my dress and freshly plaited hair, ruining all Mika and Ilona's work. I look like a fool.
Carefully, child.
Darcy moves quickly to my side.
Ain't pulling a stump out of the ground. Did you cut yourself?
I should have. I felt the sharp clay slicing across my palm. Anyone else would need stitches, if not surgery. But I know without looking that my skin is unbroken. I'm fine. I try to pull away, not wanting further attention, but the headmistress's meaty hands envelop mine, gently examining. A crash draws everyone's attention. I look up to see Selin standing over a shattered pot, dirt and stiff root all over the classroom floor.
Creator, did everyone grease their fingers this morning?
Having assured herself I am not bleeding, Darcy lifts her skirts and hurries over to Selin, my accident forgotten. Selin catches my eye, and I know without a word spoken that she threw her pot to the stone floor on purpose before the others could think too much on what I'd done. I can't imagine what I would do without her. I step away to the scrub basin to wash as the others finish potting, losing much of Ilona's powder work in the process. The apprentice dress and apron are designed to resist soil and come passably clean with a brushing. Not so my hair. Undoing the braids would take the rest of the class and leave me looking even more dishevelled. I try to shake them out, without much success. I can feel the dirt tickling my scalp, damp and gritty. I feel humiliated, but I do what Ilona would, and return to my seat with my head held high, just as Headmistress Darcy lays out the exam I knew was coming. I know more answers than not, but it doesn't matter if I can brew a perfect sleeping draught from tampweed and skyflower, or identify a dozen seeds by their shapes. The only answers the Duchess will notice will be the ones I miss.
Think I did all right, Selin murmurs after we lay down our pens and Darcy collects the papers. You?
Remember me fondly when Mother kills me, I tell her. Selin laughs like a swan, a snap to her long neck and a sound more honk than giggle.
Can't be that bad.
When you passed the flamework exam, your Da whooped and swept you off your feet, I say. I scored higher, but when I told Mother, she lectured me for 2 hours over the dangers of the one question I got wrong.
Da's just happy I can read, Selin says. Says he couldn't do more than sign his name till he had 30 summers.
As if on cue, Minda gasps, and all the apprentices sit up straight, backs arched and eyes forward. I look up and sigh. The Duchess has paid an impromptu visit. Striking coincidence that it's just after an exam. The apprentices bow their heads and spread their skirts as my mother, Duchess Leisha Paper, enters the classroom. Her eyes flick over me, taking in the smudges on my dress and the state of my hair.
Leisha!
Darcy pushes to her feet and curtsies. Oh, enough of that. The Duchess waves the gesture away and opens her arms for an embrace. This, too, is practice protocol. A message to the apprentices that Headmistress Darcy is in the Duchess's favour. Even Selin doesn't call her Leisha, and they're sisters. Darcy embraces Mother, but does not linger.
Didn't know you were planning a visit. Just passing by. The Duchess glances at the exam papers on Darcy's desk. How are your students progressing? Darcy's eyes flick to me, and for one terrible moment I imagine her handing my mother my exam to grade right in front of the class. But she doesn't. Got a lot of fine young gatherers in this batch, I think. Olive's always first to raise her hand, but they've all got talent. The words are all true, after a fashion, but the Duchess raises a brow at the planting table. The floor's been swept clean, but her pale blue eyes drift over the shards of clay in the waste bin. Problems repotting the stiff root? My fault, Selin cuts in before Darcy can reply. She holds up her big hands. Don't know my own strength sometimes. Just like your father. The Duchess smiles at Selin, and my friend beams in spite of herself. Mother's compliments have that effect. All the more precious for their rarity. I can't remember the last time she smiled like that at me. The Duchess looks back to Darcy. Would you mind if I borrowed my daughter a short while, headmistress? Of course not. Darcy curtsies, and my stomach knots again. I keep close to the windows as we walk the halls of Gatherers University, trying not to stare at the delicate warded spectacles hanging from a silver chain around Mother's neck. Her magic doesn't work in sunlight. No magic does. Sun burns the power away. Which is why demons, creatures of innate magic, only used to come up from the safety of the core at night. The Duchess is a witch, though she hates that word. It's a science to her, if rather unlike what we learn in herb lore and chemics class. She isn't the kind of witch that stars in jongleurs' tales, cackling and putting curses on folk in need of a lesson. Mother's wardings protect Hollow from demons. Or so they say. I've never seen a calling, alive or even recently dead. Just old demon bones, kept in darkness to preserve their power. The war against demonkind ended before I learned to walk. The few callings to survive the Deliverer's Purge were banished to the edge of Mother's Great Wards and hunted down by General Garrod's cutters. But whatever the fate of the callings, the Duchess's magic is real. Her demon bone dice are carved with wards of prophecy, letting her read what is and what might be. I've seen her predict fire, flood, and drought with uncanny accuracy. A ready brigade here, a levy there, an order to lay in extra stores for one season, and Mother averted all those disasters, keeping her people sheltered with clean water and full bellies. I've never seen her use the wand she wears at her belt for more than drawing wards of light and sound to brighten a room or make herself heard before a crowd. But I've read histories and seen more than one painting of her using it to throw fire and lightning at callings during the war. Exaggerations, I'm sure, but too many folk claim to have borne witness to dismiss the tales entirely. But it's the spectacles I hate the most. Magic radiates up from the core, but every living thing carries a bit of it inside them. The wards of sight, etched around the lenses, allow Mother to see magic as a soft glow, including each person's individual aura. Auras are as personal as their fingerprints, yet as fluid as lake water, shifting with our thoughts and feelings throughout the day. With her ward sight, the Duchess can read a person's aura to spot a lie or a mission as easily as she might page through one of her dry books of old world science. Sometimes she seems to pluck a thought right out of your head. I'm never alone as it is. Never unguarded, never free to sneak around and kiss like Selin. My thoughts are the only privacy I have left. You pulled too hard on the pot and broke it, Mother notes as we walk. So much for the protection of sunlight. Even without her spectacles, the Duchess can see through me. It was an accident. I know before they pass my lips that the words are insufficient to stem the coming lecture. Nothing can. Mother's lectures are like the rain. Inevitable. Unavoidable. You have to be more careful, Olive, Mother says. If folk realize how strong you are, they may find it unnatural. Aren't I? I ask. Nonsense, Mother chides. What kind of talk is that? Then why must I hide it? I demand. Because the less attention you draw, the safer you are, Mother says. You'll have plenty of attention next summer, like it or not. The words make me swallow my retort. What happens next summer? 16 summers is old enough to approach, the Duchess reminds. Next spring, the Angerians will begin sending calling cards and invitations to balls, and the Crasian matchmakers will form a line at my gate. Duchess Arrain is chomping at the bit to introduce you to her grandson, Rhinebeck. Introduce? I've been exchanging letters with Prince Rhinebeck since we were children. As a suitor, Mother says. Even Duchess Elissa of Milm has some young prince in mind if we're interested. Men will come court me. I am incredulous, but there is a tinge of excitement at the prospect of suitors. It's one thing to sneak off with a stable boy, and another to walk in the gardens with a boy everyone considers a good match. I wonder if Rhinebeck is handsome. But in my heart, I know it isn't that simple. Even if Rhinebeck shines on me like the sun, there's no telling what he'll do on the wedding night when he realizes I'm not like other women. I'm not ready to promise anyone, is all I can manage. Of course not, Mother agrees. You're far too young. You've never kissed anyone. You would know. I struggle to keep calm as even this small fantasy of freedom is snatched away. You were promised at 13. Grandmum told me. Eh, she would know. Mother echoes my own thoughts. It was her ripping idea, and ended in disaster. I'd say that's reason enough not to let one's mother make the decisions, but I don't have the courage. When will I be old enough? Mother looks me over, choosing her words carefully. A few more summers, I beg. I blow a slow breath from my nostrils, trying to hide the blend of anger and disappointment. Can I at least go on the borough tour with the other girls? Mother wrinkles her nose. I don't think that's a good idea. There's too much happening at court. The Marja tribe have opened their border for the first time since you were born. We're hosting their diplomats in a fortnight to negotiate their entry into the Pact of the Free Cities. If you want to tour the boroughs after that, I can have a team. I don't want a team. The Duchess blinks as I cut her off. I don't want servants and bodyguards and First Minister Arthur himself teaching the history of each town we visit. Mother puts her hands on her hips. Then I think you're missing the point of the borough tour. It's a rite of passage. You're the one missing the point, I cut in again. And this time, the look on Mother's face is decidedly less patient. Of course, the tour is about learning the history of the Duchy, I allow, carefully measuring my tone. But that's not why it's a rite of passage. It's about being away from home with your friends. It's about being out from under your parents' thumb for a few days to see the towns, to sleep in portable ward circles in the wildlands beyond the great wards. You'll be with friends, Mother says. Selen and Mika. I stop walking. Mother continues for two strides, then stops and turns, irritation showing for the first time. Selen is going with the other girls. General Garrod gave permission. Mika is my nanny. Mika is your sister, Mother corrects, but I only fold my arms. Fine, the Duchess snaps. You can't go because it's too dangerous. The other girls, even Selen, don't have assassins hunting them. Mother, please, I roll my eyes. She moves quickly, quicker than even I can react. Her hand cups my chin, forcing me to meet her eyes. I try to resist, but I'm not the only one who's strong. Mother's fingers are like ice, cold and unyielding. I know she would never hurt me, but she is frightening nonetheless. This is serious, Olive. An assassin could be on you just as quickly, quicker in fact, and they won't just cup your chin. I try to pull away, but Mother lets go of my chin and takes my arm. To an observer, it might be a simple, motherly gesture, but her free hand is touching her wand, and even with my strength, her grip is like carved marble as she steers me into an empty classroom, closing the door behind us.
"Show some respect for your sister," the Duchess snaps. "She's devoted her life to caring for you."
She's right, but Mother wields the guilt like a lash, trying to distract me. I yank my arm free, striding across the room to stand by the window. Even indirect sunlight is an effective shield against Mother's powers.
"And show some respect for me," the Duchess says, "when I tell you the demons are not all gone, like the tenders say, banished by the Deliverer.
Without the protection of the Great Ward, you will be vulnerable." I lower my eyes, trying to look respectful, like I understand the danger. But I don't. I've never so much as glimpsed a wind demon silhouetted against the sky. No one has seen a calling in years. They've become ale stories, like talking night wolves or fairy pipkins. Mother says that when the Deliverer purged the demons from Theza, he took much of the world's magic with him. Without demons, or their bones, to power wardings, the magic of items faded, unable to fully recharge. There were few folk left with magic of note anymore, beyond my parents and... Won't the warded children be there to guide and protect us? Mother looks like someone put lemon in her tea. The warded children were an experiment of hers during the war. The Deliverer tattooed wards on his flesh, the symbols drawing and holding magic that the tales say gave him fantastical powers. Mother tried to replicate it, with mixed results. It gave them power, but the magic changed them, as it did me. The children live in the wilds beyond the Great Wards now, patrolling the borderlands. "The warded children cannot be trusted," Mother says. "Even the good ones can turn feral if they encounter a demon. And Renna Bales isn't there to hold their leash. With solstice falling on New Moon this year, that's not a risk I'm prepared to take." I blink. Folk speak of the warded children like forest gods, too wild for polite society, but devoted to a life of service. Theza's first line of defense. The idea they might not be trustworthy is unthinkable. That, or Mother is just trying to scare me.
"Fine, send the guards," I throw up my hands. "Send Captain Wanda if you must, but let me go with my friends."
Mother uses two fingers to massage her temple. It's a sign she's getting a headache, which means I am either winning or about to lose spectacularly.
"You'll ride in the royal carriage," Mother says.
"But," I begin, "putting me in the royal carriage will separate me from the others, more than any army of hollow soldiers."
"No buts," Mother says. "It's armoured. Selen, Mika, and Lord Arthur will ride with you. Captain Wanda out front with half a dozen hollow lancers. As you visit the boroughs, you can get out for walking tours and shopping with your classmates. But Wanda and Mika will accompany you at all times."
I press my lips together. It's not what I imagined, but it's better than being left behind. Far better. For once, I can leave the capital, leave Mother, and see something of the world for myself.
"And you'll stay behind on the overnights beyond the Great Ward," the Duchess finishes.
I feel my eyes bulge as I take in the words.
"Even with an armoured carriage, Wanda, Arthur, and half a dozen lancers, I still can't go on a ripping camping trip."
I'm ready to say more, but Mother cuts me off with a raised finger.
"I'm offering a compromise, Olive.
I suggest you take it."
"Did you ask?"
Selen is waiting outside Headmistress Darcy's classroom when I return, the other girls already dismissed.
"We need to hurry," I say. "Father will have my hide if I'm late."
"Take it the answer was no," Selen says as we quickstep down the halls. "Running is prohibited, but the two of us can put on considerable speed without breaking academic decorum."
"It wasn't no."
I watch excitement blossom on Selen's face and hate that I'm about to quash it.
"But it wasn't exactly yes. I can't go beyond the wards."
Selen stops short.
"But that's the best part."
I grab her arm and pull her back into motion. It's one thing to argue with Mother, and quite another to cross Dharma Ting Father. I can be reckless at times, but I am not an utter fool. The Duchess is worried I'll get eaten by a demon. Selen honks a laugh. No one's seen a demon since we were in nappies. And even if one did find us, Wanda would have a warded arrow through its skull before it got close enough to pounce. I made all of these same points to Mother, but it didn't do much good. Before I can say more, the great bell rings. Night. The halls are empty as I abandon decorum and break into a run, appearing in Father's doorway a moment later. The ancient Krasian priestess kneels on a pillow at the centre of the room, eyes closed. She is swathed from head to toe like Mika, but instead of black, Father wears robes and scarves of pure white. An extra hour in the Chamber of Sorrows for lateness. Father doesn't look up from her meditation, or even open her eyes. She understands Thesan, but I've never heard her use it, speaking only in her native Krasian. A crack of her wand across my knuckles I could weather, but there is nothing worse than the Chamber of Shadows. Below the crypts, below the basements of the university, the chamber is suffocatingly deep. There are no lights, only wards of sight, like those on Mother's spectacles, to let me see, in magic's strange spectrum, as I etch items with wards of power under Father's close supervision. I was in a meeting with Mother, I dare to say. The desert allows no excuses. Father's voice is serene, and neither do I. Hey, she would know, Selen whispers. She's older than sand. I suppress a smile, but not quick enough, as Father's eyes snap open, fixed on Selen. I can punish you as well, Selen Vargarad, but I'll leave that to Dharma Ting Jaya. Princess Olive does not need an escort to class from one already late for her own. See you in the sparring yard. Selen scurries down the hall, more to escape Father than for fear of the Krasian studies teacher. Jaya is far less strict. The room is dark as I shut the door behind me. The windows are covered in thick curtains, blocking all outside light. Father still kneels on a pillow on the floor, the dim lamp before her providing the only illumination. An hour for being late, and two more for your disrespect, she says as I kneel on the thin pillow across from her. Could she have heard Selen's whispered words? It seems impossible. The old woman would need ears like a bat. Perhaps some spell allows her to hear across rooms. Like Mother, Father is a formidable witch. I resolve to take greater care opening my mouth near her class. The other girls take Krasian studies with Dharma Ting Jaya, learning the language and culture of our southern neighbours. The 12 tribes of Krasia lived for thousands of years in and about the walled city of Fort Krasia, the Desert Spear. 2 decades ago, my father, Armin Jardir, let them out of the sands to conquer the Greenlands in a bid to levy troops for the Demon War. A peace was forged before he made it this far north, but apart from the Marja tribe, who took their spoils of war and returned to Desert Spear, the Krasians never gave up the lands they had taken. New Krasia has flourished in the years since. Jaya is a priestess of Everam, whom my father's people believe to be the creator. But she is young, and shaped by her decades in the Greenlands. She married a hollower, assimilating more than most of her people. Behind her veil, her eyes are always smiling. Not so, ancient father. The aged priestess is one of Mother's most trusted advisers, and Father made her my personal tutor to ensure I understood my heritage. Unlike other instructors, eager to praise me and curry favour with Mother, nothing I do is good enough to please Father. While Selen and the other girls have fun learning the culture of my father's people, cooking Krasian dishes, celebrating Krasian holidays, and making conversation in the language, Father indoctrinates me in the secrets of the Dharma Ting priestesses, which consist mostly of prayer, wardcraft, field surgery, and enough books of prophecy to make my head spin. I can stabilize a warrior before they bleed out, but I don't know a single Krasian dance. I've never seen Farva smile. Even on the rare occasions when she removes her veil, the deep lines of her face are always pinched in judgment. The crone is said to be more than a century old, an easy rumor to believe. Her limbs are little more than bones with a tough coating of sinew, every vein visible and a thin, translucent skin. But Farva still greets each morning with Sharusark, her poses strong as a statue. Her memory is sharp, reaching across a century as easily as one might flip to a desired section on a well-read book. Take out your dice. I am quick to comply, laying a clean cloth before me and pulling a thick velvet pouch out from an apron pocket. I spill 7 clay dice, each with a different number of faces, onto the pristine white silk. Farva scoops up the dice with a practiced hand, rolling the rough clay in her fingers. Pathetic. 15 years old, and you have yet to complete a passable set of clay. In Krasia, you would have been thrown from the Dharmating Palace by now. I should be so fortunate. I no more wish to be a seer than a herb gatherer, and even if I were to somehow manage both, Mother and Farva will still find ways to be disappointed in me. I'd rather visit the Abyss than spend 3 hours in the Chamber of Shadows, straining to make sense of Wardsight as I struggle to mould and carve dice of clay. But as with most things in my life, there is nothing to do but endure. The only person who can override Farva is Mother, and I can't imagine she ever would. She laughed the one time I complained that Farva cracked my knuckles with her wand. My old teacher Bruna had a bigger stick than Farva and used it twice as often, the Duchess said. Every swat was a lesson I never forgot. Farva hands the dice back to me, producing her own set. These are not crude clay. They were carved from the black bones of a demon the better part of a century ago. The worn surfaces shine like polished obsidian, but every facet, every symbol, remains sharp. Farva slips the Hansar from her belt. I know from experience the curved Krasian blade is sharp as a razor. She drives the point into her thumb, smearing blood across some of the wards. Everam, giver of light and life, your children need answers. The dice begin to glow as she shakes them, distributing the blood. Will it rain tomorrow? She throws with force, but a skilled hand. None of the dice stray from the cloth as they flare with magic that jerks them unnaturally out of their spins. Farva glances at the throw, grunts, and sits back. She waves a hand for me to begin seeking an answer to her question in the scattering of the symbols before me. I squint at the throw. I know the meanings of all awards, but what they tell me is gibberish. There are no facing symbols for air, or water, or anything remotely useful in predicting the weather. Farva scowls as I reach for my textbook. I ignore her look, trying to buy time. Rain readings are vital in the desert, where these arts began. There are detailed sections on such foretellings. But even these are little help. It seems each seer had their own way of reading the dice, and the methods are often at odds with one another. Reading from the center, there is darkness gathering, which might mean rain clouds. Reading from north to south, the darkness dissipates. Well, Farva prompts, it will, I guess. The odds could be worse. Are you certain? Farva asks. I blow out a breath. No. Farva nods. You should have trusted that instinct. You'd be no worse off flipping a coin than making a prediction based on this throw. But the magic, I say. What is the point of all this if a throw cannot be trusted? There are questions I would ask about who I am, about what I am meant to be. But it seems pointless to spend years mastering an art just to make an educated guess at the answers. The magic imprints off the question, Farva says, on our lips and in our hearts. We do not always know the right question.
So if you don't ask if you might be trampled by a horse, I prompt.
The Alagai Hora will volunteer nothing, Father says. Rain is a delicate balance of elements, not a constant like sunrise. Many times it takes more than one throw to circle to an answer built off so many variables.
She scoops her dice up in a practiced hand.
Tell me, Olive Var Leisha, what should I ask next?
If you should take an umbrella tomorrow? I ask. Fava makes a dry sound in her throat that might just be a chuckle. I dread the hours in the Chamber of Shadows, but I put it from my mind, relieved to be free of the oppressive darkness of Fava's classroom. Selen and the others are changing into Sharisark robes when I join them. I dread this part of the day, but Selen immediately moves to my side, blocking me from the others' view as I turn my back and slip off my dress. The other girls wear simple cotton undergarments that are easy to remove, but I wear a traditional Krasian bido, a length of silk woven many times between my legs and over my hips. I say it is to honour my heritage, but truer is I feel safer bound up tight, lest one of the other girls notice my body is different from theirs. I can't help but glance around the room, seeing that difference increase as we grow older. Already, my classmates are filling out. Minda looks like a woman grown, and others are not far behind. Mother and Grandmum are similarly curved, but I just seem to be getting taller and more muscular. Mother thinks it's the balance of my female and male hormones. My flow has come, and my voice is deeper than I'd like, but I have neither hair on my chin nor a woman's curves. Mother says I may develop either, or both, late or not at all.
So how bad was it? Selen asks as I pull on the loose pants and robe we wear in the practice yard.
A scolding, I say, and 3 hours in the chamber.
3 hours! Selen exclaims. Night! Just for being a few seconds late!
1 for being late, I say, and 2 more for smirking when you said she was old as sand. Selen rubs the back of her neck.
Hey, sorry about that.
We're even, I lay a hand on her arm. Thanks for dropping that flower pot.
It was nothing, Selen says. Couldn't pull the course bond route free anyway.
Wanda is already in the yard when the apprentices file out. The big woman has taken off her armour and laid her weapons aside. But she looks no less dangerous in loose-fitting cotton. Traditional Sharusark robes are black or white, but hers are forest green, symbolic of her fighting style, mixing Krasian hand-to-hand combat techniques with Thesan boxing. Fava calls it sacrilege, but I've never seen Wanda lose a match, even against Krasian warriors of note. She waits, balanced on one leg, the other foot flat against her thigh, steady as a tree. We assemble silently in the yard, standing in even rows. Wanda drops her foot to the ground, and we mirror her bow. Then the forms, known as Sharukin, begin. Many of the poses are Krasian, embracing the heavens, filling the basin, asps strike, lonely minaret. Others are Sharukin of Wanda's own design. Wind breaks a branch, felling the tree, harvest reap. We move as one, breathing and flowing from pose to pose in reflection of our teacher. The movements are gentle, but I feel myself begin to sweat as they tax muscles and push flexibility to its limits. Mother insists all herb gatherers learn the poses, another relic from the war. But I've always enjoyed Sharusark, practicing since I first learned to walk. The forms are the one time of day my mind stops racing and I can be at peace. It ends all too soon. Wanda straightens and bows to the class again.
Find your partners, girls!
Selen and I immediately link up. We're larger than the other apprentices, and none would dare spar with the princesses of Hollow in any event. I wouldn't mind, but while my forms are more precise, Selen has always been better at applying them to combat.
Wanda gives a whistle, and the other girls watch as Selen and I trade kicks and punches, probing blows easily blocked as we circle each other. Better watch out, I wink, trying to distract her. My powder's already ruined, so I've got no reason to hold back. Selen honks, knowing the game. Come at me. I'll give you another shiner like last week. Elona is still mad about that, I say. Nothing gets under her skin like her mother. Hey, Selen growls. But when you hit me so hard my ears swelled up like a cauliflower, she thought it was a grand joke. With sudden speed and intent, she rushes in, reaching for my thigh. I'm quick to counter, but it was a ruse, and I curse myself as Selen shifts targets, taking hold of the collar of my robe. She pivots smoothly, using my own weight and momentum to flip me onto my back. I try to scramble away, but Selen has a firm grip on my sleeve, jerking my hand out from under me. My cheek slams into the dirt of the practice yard, soiling my face for the second time today. Selen never stops moving, swinging a leg around my neck in a submission hold I don't have the leverage to break. I heave, and hear apprentices gasp as I get all the way to my feet, dragging Selen up with me. Still, she keeps the hold, hanging upside down as her thighs continue to squeeze, cutting off breath and blood. At last, I stagger and tap her leg. Immediately, she lets go, and I gasp in a breath. Good work, Sel, Wanda says, as I punch the ground in frustration. Olive, you were watching her hands when you should have been watching her feet. Mindra Ulana, you're up next. I watch her feet, but Selen wins the next match as well. The third time we attempt a simultaneous takedown, both of us end up on the floor, but not in the way either intended. Wanda calls it a draw. I don't understand it. I'm stronger than Selen, but even if I were willing to cut loose in front of the other girls, I'm not sure it would matter. I get the feeling Selen is holding back as well. Should have seen that throw coming, Olive, Wanda says after the other girls have been dismissed. Got to know when to take your time and when to get aggressive. Life might depend on it someday. I know she means well, but it's been a long day of disappointing my teachers, and I don't know how much more I can take. Mika's braiding has held, but I pull the tie and shake out my hair, trying to work out some of the dirt as I let it fall over the scrape where my cheek hit the ground. Wanda notes the move. Used to wear my hair like that too. She waves her fingers at the scars on one side of her face. Covers things all right, but makes you feel ashamed over something you ought not. Gonna have a shiner there, but you earned it. Working hard. One time, Drillmaster Caval twisted my arm so hard my shoulder went black and blue for 2 weeks. She has a strange notion of encouragement, but I take the point and pull back my hair. I don't want people to see the mark. It's a sign of my failure, and no doubt Grandmum will have something to say about it. But I'm tired of being ashamed. I may never be enough for Mother or Father, but at least Captain Wanda knows I'm trying. Wanda gives an approving nod and smiles. Your mum says I get to take you on the Borough Tour. Gonna be fun, even if we can't go beyond the Great Ward. Are the Wildlands that dangerous? I ask. Should Selen and the others worry about getting caught? Bah! Wanda waves a hand. Ain't missing as much as you think, Olive. Cutter patrols did in all the callings near the Great Wards while you were still in nappies. Your Uncle Garrod and I saw it done ourselves. Once or twice a year some calling wanders into the borderlands, but you'd have to march days for even a chance at seeing one. Warded children do for those before anyone even hears about it. Ain't ever seen one on a Borough Tour, no matter what kids whisper in the schoolyard. But it's too dangerous for me, even with the captain of Mother's Houseguard at my side. I raise an eyebrow, hoping pride will get the better of her and she'll let me go once we're out from under Mother's prying eyes. Wanda looks uneasy, but her voice deepens. Night's always dangerous, Olive, and you can't be too careful on New Moon. Your mum said no, and that's that. It's an important reminder. Wanda loves me. She believes in me. But like everyone else, she is Mother's creature, and will keep my leash taut, even when she admits there's nothing to be afraid of. The rest of the day follows much the same pattern. I'm overwhelmed by all the equations in chemics class, but manage to hold my own in biology. Then it's over to the Warders' Academy. A reverse of Herb Law. Warding class is mostly boys, but Selin isn't one to sit in back when she's outnumbered. She takes a seat in their centre and spins the tale of the bruise on my face into something to rival an ale story of the Demon War. Her punch, a last-ditch effort that only delayed my inevitable victory. The bookish boys hang on her every word until the instructor, my grandfather Ernie, wraps his cane and sets us to work. He comes to stand over my workbench as I struggle to carve a wind demon ward into the soft clay of a roofing tile before it's fired. Demons vary, depending on terrain, and a ward for callings of one type won't stop those of another. I know the wards for the basic demon types, rock, wind, wood flame, water mimic and mind, by heart, and 100 more besides. With a needle and thread, I can embroider ward work designs that make my dresses the envy of other girls, and even earn the occasional compliment from Mother. But as in the Chamber of Shadows, I am clumsy with the tools in the warding shop, as apt to break whatever I'm warding as get it right.
Smoother strokes, Olive.
Ernie's voice is endlessly patient, but still, I feel I am disappointing him.
This isn't stitching. Visualize the ward and commit to each line in one motion.
He takes a fresh tile, carving out the symbol with quick, efficient movements. The ease of his cut makes me not want to work while he's watching, so I ask a question instead. Why do we still need ward roofing tiles, if the Great Ward protects us?
Humanity forgot how to ward once, because the demons went quiet, and it nearly cost us everything when they returned,
Granda says.
Won't forget again, if we're smart.
They went quiet for 3,000 years, I say. Not sure I even believe the story myself. That's a long time to remember. Ernie sighs.
We do what we can, Olive. The rest is up to the Creator.
Ain't fair. Selin paces the tiles as I scrub my face at the end of the day. The hike is safe enough for every teenager in the duchy, but you have to spend it locked in the nearest inn. You don't have to tell me. I check the mirror, pleased to note the scrape on my cheek has already faded. I've always been a quick healer. You'll be lucky to escape Mother's bubble yourself. Selin's mouth opens. How's that? I smile ruefully. The Duchess promised I would have my friends to keep me company. Selin shakes her head.
Dar may be some big hero of the Demon War, but he ain't ever seen a fight like the one he'll get if he goes back on his promise to let me go beyond the wards, no matter what the Duchess says.
It doesn't matter what he wants, Sel. If the Duchess gives an order, Uncle Garrod will follow it. Selin crosses her arms.
He does, and I'll steal away anyway.
I raise an eyebrow. And how will you manage that?
Same way you should.
Selin drops her voice, even though we're alone.
Slip a drop of tampweed and skyflower into Wanda's and Mika's tea the night before. That little, and they won't even taste it. Won't put them to sleep right away, but when it does, they'll be out till noon.
Hike starts at dawn. We can be miles from the Great Ward before they wake.
Selin speaks with confidence, but I shake my head before it can infect me.
The guides will know we're not allowed. Everyone in Hollow knows what we look like.
As girls, Selin says.
I blink. Eh? What's that?
I can raid Dar's armory for a couple breastplates and helms.
She winks.
I'll get Perrin to hide them under the carriage. We slip off and join some group of bumpkins just off the farm. Boys don't have to fight to go on the borough tour like us girls. They get a pat on the shoulder and a loan of Dar's armour. No one will look twice at us.
My stomach clenches with nervous excitement as I realise she's right. Wanda herself might not recognise us in breastplates and helms.
There will be quarter pay when we get back.
Selin shrugs. Ain't gonna throw us in the dungeon, Olive. Same song as always. We say we're sorry and promise never to do it again. Maybe a whipping if they're really mad. Walk on tiptoe for a couple of weeks, and then it's forgotten.
Selin is right. General Garrod didn't want her going on the borough tour at first either. She spent her whole life wrestling with her father for rights and freedoms he gave without thought to her younger brothers. Since that day we wanted to spar, she's fought for every step, the same as I have. If you choose to be a boy, I will support you, Mother promised that day. But it was a false choice. I had no idea what it meant to be treated like a boy then. Even now, strapped tight in my beader weave, I don't fully understand it. Perhaps it's time to learn.